Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bound. On today's show, I'm speaking with the American singer-songwriter Maggie Rogers, who's out about touring and talking about her new album titled Don't Forget Me. You'll know Rogers from, well, her being a considerable international recording artist with two big studio albums, 2019's Heard It in a Past Life and 2022's Surrender, which have garnered attention, Grammy nominations and big tours. And now Monocle on Culture, the icing on the cake. Rogers was born in Maryland in 1994 and studied at NYU, where she graduated with a music production and engineering degree with English. Not bad prep for being a highly literate pop star. But not before artist in residence Pharrell Williams raved about a song she wrote on the course titled Alaska, which knocked the megastar's cashmere socks off. Of course, that went viral and did no harm at all. But Rogers has built on her much firmer foundations as a songwriter of innovation, wit and invention in a kind of classic mould. She sounds like she means it because she does mean it, and we can all tell, and sing back the choruses. Perfect. The new record, Don't Forget Me, was written in just 5 days, an early Beatles-like effort of straight-to-tape creativity. It was made with Rogers' partner in crime, Ian Fitchuk, at New York City's Electric Lady Studios, and that quickness really shows in a good way. The songs are direct, effervescent, memorable, and cut a real musical dash. Rogers will tell us that she imagined herself on a road trip and this as its soundtrack. She's heading for the horizon with the top down, and we're all invited along for the ride. Here is its maestro, Maggie Rogers. Maggie, it's wonderful to have you on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
To shout it from the rooftops that the new album is wonderful, that it's out.
Oh.
And we firmly condone it on this program. But first things first, does releasing records, does it feel good? The process of getting the thing out there, of talking about it, of doing stuff, not necessarily exactly this, but things like this.
Putting music out feels amazing.
Right.
Because I feel like it's such a funny thing. You only get to update your public image every 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's really nice to have something refreshed. And also, like, I love playing music and touring so much that it's really such a treat to have new songs to play on the road more than anything.
Right. Yeah. And this particular record, the artist's statement, if I may be so bold,
sure,
came with it that we've read, talked about the sort of freshness of the recording process, mm-hmm, and the writing process particularly.
Yeah.
Does this LP feel different to the others in the sense that it is kind of gone straight from sort of farm to table so quickly?
Oh, I like that. That's
you like
nice.
That? It's
I
farm
that's
fresh.
That's nice. I like that. Yeah. It's farm fresh certified. Yeah. No, completely. I mean, this is the first record I've made since the pandemic. And
yeah,
I think that everybody spent so much time like deep diving into their own brain in all that quiet space we had. And at least I know I did. And I think for so much of my life, records have been about a record of a period of time. I have so much reverence and devotion for music that I've taken that very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about this record is there's almost a sense of play that has come back in. Like what you referenced earlier is that
you play music, right?
But it
often seems like work. Sometimes.
Yeah, well, it actually, I've never ever played less music than when music actually became my job, which is, you know, what people say about like turning the thing you love into your profession. But I made this record in 5 days. And if you would have told me that a couple of years ago, I think I would have been like, what drugs were you on?
But it we can go into that later.
Sure, yes. It was actually so grounded and so relaxed. Like, I sort of made a record by not trying to make a record.
Yeah.
And it happened just, it was around Christmas, like of when the year switched from 2022 to 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So about a year and a half ago now.
Yeah.
And I had only played a couple shows for my last record, Surrender. Exclusively in the UK, actually. So there was absolutely no pressure to make a record because I hadn't even really toured the last one. I thought I was just going in to like have a couple play days in the studio before Christmas. And I think I knew I wanted to make a record with a band.
Yeah.
And because I knew that all the recording process, it just felt like we were making demos. So yeah, it was nice. Total, like,
so you sort of fooled yourself.
No pressure,
into...
completely. And because that all happened, the recordings, when we listened back, my wonderful co-writer and co-producer, Ian Fitchuk, mm-hmm. When we listened back, there's actually so much unguarded emotion and character and personality and life in the record that, you know, we spent some time trying to expand on the arrangements, and every time we tried to boost them up,
yeah.
They sort of fell down like a little souffle.
You kind of didn't need that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so it was nice. There was time for it to become an active choice to leave the recordings as they were, rather than it just being like lazy. There was like real consideration time.
People will be glad to hear it on the
Yeah,
on the
it was a
cho-
it was
fine.
A choice.
Yeah, okay.
No, but anyway, it was such a wonderful, playful, freeing process. And I think my last record, Surrender, was a reflection of the time. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Well. It was just a bit intense and heavy because that's what the world looked like at that time, and it was nice to just let some silliness back in the room. So close the door, change the channel, give me something I can handle. A good lover or someone that's nice to me. Take my money, wreck my son.
Can you hear yourself, when you listen back to the record, when you listen back to Don't Forget Me, can you hear the kind of levity and fun and that kind of, hang on, is this a demo, these demos, or is this an album?
Totally.
Can you hear that back
oh
in your
God.
Own voice, your own playing, the joy that comes off the,
so much.
Off the recording?
Well, first of all, my friends who have heard it have all said that it sounds like the version of me that they know.
Okay, nice.
So that like unguarded, loose nature is really there. Mm. But also like at the end of track two is the song called Drunk. At the end, there's this moment where you can hear both Ian and I go
great.
Like, woo!
Yeah.
Like, just like, you know, that moment when you've just written a song and you're playing it live for the end, and you're playing it for the first time, and you get to the end and you're like,
yeah.
Yo, this is sick! Like, or like, there's a sort of pithy, sassy voicemail in So Sick of Dreaming.
This is the New York Knicks and having two martinis at the
exactly.
bar. And I love that. I mean, that's...
It was this total...
I love the talking bits in any songs, but
yeah,
particularly that.
Yeah, I do
that.
Too. Yeah. It was this total bit that I had just, like, freestyled to make Ian laugh.
Yeah.
As, like, I was like, oh, this will be some instrumental section. Someone will take a solo.
Yeah.
And I was just like, give me one take. And I threw it in there. And then it just made us both laugh so much that we kept it. So I think you can hear... There's real sincerity on the record as well.
Yeah.
But the silliness is present, which I think life should be that way.
I love that little talking bit in that track. And I wonder where that came from, because I, again, to go back to your kind of artist statement,
sure.
that's part of the release for this, you talk about a mohair rug and a bottle of whiskey and Joan Didion's
motel
study
room,
or whatever,
yeah,
or motel
totally,
room.
Yeah.
And I wonder, but I was scrunching through my memory, trying to wonder if that was something from Slouching from Bethlehem or wherever
oh,
that came from.
No.
The thing that you ad-lib.
Oh, yeah.
About the tickets to the
Knicks. He calls me up 15 minutes before the reservation. No, I mean, I had rewatched Sex and the City during the pandemic, so there's definitely some Carrie Bradshaw in there.
Had that vibe.
But I like had been to a steak restaurant the night before in New York, and the Knicks had a big game that night.
Yeah.
And like... It's so much of this record is like woven pieces of my life rather than like telling the exact story of what was going on exactly at that time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of fiction, which I think can sometimes allow you to tell the greatest truth of all. And then there's a lot of memories from all over, you know, from being 18 or 22 or 24. I mean, I turn 30 just a week or two after this record comes out. So in many ways, Don't Forget Me sort of feels like this like, big tapestry ode to my 20s.
You sort of looking, I mean, we can talk about the sort of road trip aspect mm-hmm. Of the record as well, but this feels maybe to me like you looking back from this convertible at the desert beyond.
Totally.
Well, I say desert.
Yeah,
I don't mean that metaphorically.
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you.
With your scarf blowing in the wind, kissing it goodbye to
some
extent.
I love that image. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like...
That's the video sorted.
I love it.
Don't worry, no one's ever done it before.
Right. There's definitely some like Thelma and Louise within the backdrop and the landscape of this record.
Yeah.
But it wasn't consciously looking back when I wrote it. I mean, when I wrote it, this sort of character and this narrative started to appear, and I started writing it as if I was writing scenes in a movie that took place over like 48 hours or something, you know, like she goes to the bar and she makes out with this guy and she's not really stoked about it, but she did it. And then on the walk home, what does she feel? Oh, she's probably like kind of lonely.
Yeah.
And so like, okay, let's write that song. Like it was a way to just keep us moving and just keep figuring out where to go next, because at, you know, one of the greatest tools in making this record kind of was momentum.
Yeah.
So it was just about keeping gas in the car.
And that thing of writing for a fictitious version of yourself or a version of yourself.
Totally.
Or simply a person that you've imagined doing all these amusing things on this kind of nominal road trip, right? That's a bit like, you know, if you're a soundtrack composer, you've got a film to be soundtracking. Mm-hmm. There's something, and I've asked soundtrack composers about this, and they really like it. They might make pop music as well, but they love having the kind of, you know, the framework. It's great. It's a great thing to write to something. And I'm not suggesting you've done that, but maybe if you've got, there's a storyline that you've kind of, is somewhere in the back of your mind, you can write to that.
It was a part of the process. I mean, I think it's really helpful to have limitations when making art. Because, you know, when I walked into the studio, normally when I go to make a record, I have a sense of like the world I want to build and the colors and the references and sort of the texture and the feel of it. Mm-hmm. And this record, because I had just put out Surrender, I sort of walked in being like, I don't know, like, let's see what happens. But I think in that way, as this thing started coming forward, I didn't have to second guess it because there was no pressure to even make anything in the first place. Like it was all bonus.
Yeah.
And then when I walked away from the studio a couple of days later and got home and sort of started to listen and process what I had made, I was sort of like, oh, I think we're done. Like it was just like a real surprise.
What should I do? Okay, that's the album done. What should I do next week?
Go on tour for my last record was the answer. I mean, then I got to go tour Surrender, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, there was so much, in so many ways, the time from writing this record to releasing it, like I've grown and changed so much. And I always think you do kind of grow into a record.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about the moment in your life that it meets the world where there's some like alchemical thing that happens where you sort of start to...
You
line
and the record
up.
Osmosis, you kind of like squelch together to become this thing. Well, that's how it seems from the record buyers, the writers' point of view. You know, we love to put people in boxes and it's like, this is the sophomore
really
album.
Do.
This is how she did this. This is who she is now. Which is
funny because
rude and wrong often. But
I think that, you know, genre or those boxes often just exist to sell music and to help people understand them, which part of that is frustrating and part of that is deeply understandable. And then I think the other thing about records is it is weird because you're writing down these like super vulnerable truths about your life, but they don't really come out till like a year and a half later. So by the time you are like embodying this person, you've probably moved on in the same way that like, you know, I now have about shoulder length, normal, natural hair that really feels like this record.
We can concur that.
Yeah. Okay. It's confirmed. When I made this record, I had like a tiny bleach pixie cut, which was really what Surrender felt like. So it's funny that like, I don't know. I don't think that there is a hard line. I think you're sort of becoming it all the time.
Yeah.
But there are definitely parts of this record that have like almost come true.
Yeah.
Like the sense of timing. I'm usually always writing about the past. Mm. And this record has this really spooky past, present, future thing built into it where I wrote some songs that have like now become what my life looks like a year and a half ago, like later.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
These seem like really fun songs. Not that Surrender isn't, but this record feels like these songs are going to be great fun to play live. There's going to be a lot of chorus shout backs towards you. You know, you're going to be a lot of festival audiences shouting the choruses back to you. That's a different kettle of fish, right? That must be a nice
I mean,
song.
I really wanted to make a record that I wanted you to be able to sing along with in the car. Because I think in the pandemic, I realized that those were the records I have the most intimate relationship with. The ones that I look to when it's just me for an hour, how I choose to spend that time. Mm. It's a really personal relationship. And so I wanted to make songs that felt really singable. But they are like cruisers. I think so much about making records about the world I want them to live in. And Surrender was so much made for like rock clubs and being on stage because I was in the pandemic just like mouth watering thinking about being at a gig and someone spilling beer on my shoe.
Yeah.
And then Heard It in a Past Life was really made for headphones because that was what my life looked like. You know, I was a college kid walking around New York City. And this is really a like Sunday afternoon driving record.
I like that. And I love the idea that, you know, kind of records for record, the record buying public do have jobs. You know what I mean?
Totally.
You know, you,
I mean, this
magazine
is a job.
Questionnaires sort of say, what's your Saturday night party record? What's your Sunday morning
record?
Sure,
of course, yeah.
You know, and it is kind of putting music into boxes, but I'm sure songwriters do that too, right?
I think it's
right?
appropriate.
They're like,
yeah.
You know, of course you want to listen to the Stones on a Saturday night. Of course you want Joni Mitchell on a Sunday morning. Maybe you want them the other way around. Maybe you want neither of those things,
both are
but nonetheless.
Cool. You know, it's right? totally fine. Whatever you want.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that, you know, it's one of the greatest privileges of getting to do this professionally is that it's really special to get to soundtrack someone's deeply intimate moments. And it's something I take really, I don't take for granted. And getting to spend that time with someone is such a privilege that, I don't know, a Sunday morning driving record for me, it just feels, what more could you want?
Yeah, you're in there. You're in someone's
totally.
Head. You're in someone's car. You're in, it's
And to
it's
be
lovely.
A moment of like release or relief for someone. I mean, I think that's, music has always sort of felt like, the best way I could do the most amount of good in the world with whatever talents or skills I've ended up with.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, I don't know, Sunday afternoon is a special one to spend with someone.
Totally. I wonder, I listened to an interview with you on a, I think it's a Spotify podcast about best advice.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned collaborating with or whatever, or hanging out with a couple of the guys from Mumford and Sons who said, "Don't be bitter on it. Don't when you're writing a song, don't give into bitterness."
Totally.
I think you'd had a breakup or something, and you mentioned it to the interviewer on this other program, and I thought that was really interesting. And I thought that was interesting advice, and I thought you talking about it on that other podcast was really good advice. And did that sort of thinking, not that specific thing, but that sort of thinking of thinking about longevity, despite you cutting this record in 5 days, writing it and cutting it very quickly, did that sort of future-proofing kind of idea of songwriting, did that bleed into this record? Because it doesn't kind of sound like it, because it sounds like it was made yesterday in a good way.
Yeah, I think I'm always, I don't know, I think the goal of any artist is to make something that is timeless or can be both like timeless but modern in a way. That advice really stuck with me. I think also because I was like 23 or 24 when they said that.
Maybe you're just
me.
Giving off very bitter vibes and like, stop being bitter.
No, I think that they were sort of saying like there are emotional layers beneath that. And so many songs on this record are really about mutual culpability. Because I think the older I've gotten, the more I've sort of realized that like in any sort of relationship or friendship I've been in, it's inherent that two people will try their best to love each other. And in that, it's kind of also inherent that people might hurt each other. And that's okay. I think that being said, there are songs on this record that are like sassier or like slightly more brutal than I would ever write about someone I'd actually dated, because I feel such a protective instinct to the people that I love, whether no matter how that relationship ended.
Yeah.
But I do think it's nice to write some mutual culpability songs for once.
It's a new genre.
Yeah, honestly.
Mutual culpability comes up on you.
Right, put me in that box. I'll take that box.
I'm thinking of some mutual culpability tonight, darling. I'm going to put it on.
That's funny.
It's Otis, it's Stevie, it's mutual culpability.
Oh my God.
To go back to the recording of this thing,
sure.
You kind of mentioned how it had this inbuilt momentum.
Yep.
How do you know, the sort of bottling of that lightning is such a kind of difficult thing to do. How, in the studio with Ian Finchuk, your collaborator, how do you keep that kind of beach ball on the nose of the seal? You know, how do you keep that thing in the air, I wonder?
I don't know. We just did. We were just playing.
Is it just unleashing fresh songs and kind of going, shit, this is great? You know, is it the speed of recording the stuff and then listening back to it and kind of going, I think that's two songs we've done today.
We weren't really listening back. It was it felt like going to the office and doing this thing that we both worked really hard to be good at.
Okay.
Like, we worked from 10 to 5. We'd do a song before lunch and a song after. We weren't listening back. We weren't worrying about whether or not it was good. We were just sort of writing and playing. Mm-hmm. And, like, we'd finish it. And I think I was able to sort of just, like, put my self-critic aside, which I think a critic, your inner critic, can be really helpful for making great art, but it can also really slow the process down. And I think
it can stop you doing a lot.
The music that I love the most feels pretty instinctual and feels pretty physically and emotionally aligned.
Yeah.
And you can't kind of get in the way of that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, different people like different kinds of music and go to music for different things. So that's just what I like. But I think it was really just about, I was able to sort of like just scratch in a second verse being like, fine. Like, I'll fix this later. And then it actually, in hindsight, was great and didn't need fixing.
Does it feel awkward to admit that this record might have been kind of easy to make?
No, because I think that it was easy to make.
Was it?
Well, I don't know. I think, look, the best songs are always written really quickly.
Yeah.
That said, like, it had been 13 months since I'd written a song.
Yeah.
So you can say that song was written in 10 minutes, but it was really written in 13 months.
Yeah.
You know, or like in the 15 years I've been writing songs. Like, I think that, honestly, what's happened in the last couple of years is that I've had other things pop up in my life that mean a lot to me, whether it's like going to grad school or getting really into writing, or like my friendships mean more to me now than they ever have. And I think it's helped me take some of the pressure off of music to just be everything.
That's good.
It's really nice.
Am I right in recalling that you'd studied divinity at grad school?
I studied, yeah, religion, spirituality, yeah.
If that were to seep into your songs, the philosophical conundrums, the spiritual questions, the deep knowledge that you have accrued doing that, do you know if that's seeped into your songwriting?
I don't think it has.
It's like 15 years of experience of writing songs seeps in.
I think it's protected my work in a way.
Okay.
Well, I think so much of what I was thinking about in grad school was like creativity as a form of religion and just what it means to be in devotion or in service to something like that. And I was really trying to develop, you know, so much of my life is like really weird and specific, and so much is like really age appropriate. Like, I turned 27 and wanted to go to grad school. Like, I know a lot of people who do that, you know?
It's right.
But really what I was thinking about was, I found myself in this like consistently like unconventional ministerial position where I was like on stage with the microphone and a bunch of people wanted my advice on like love and death and marriage and relationships. Yeah. And I was like, I trained as an engineer and a producer. Like,
but you're in a pulpit, aren't you?
This is super weird and I didn't train for this. And like, I need more time to think about this. And so going to grad school was really like, sort of saying, okay, if I'm going to make art forever, which is the goal, I need to think about a system and a structure that can work in a sustainable way for me to do this and to really spend some time thinking about what I believe and what does it mean to be an artist. And I think that, you know, Don't Forget Me is the first record I made since doing all of that work. So when I was making the record, I wasn't thinking at all about my academic graduate career. But I think the sort of time spent and the grounding self-knowledge nature of it sort of has helped me just be a little bit looser with all of it. Or I think that there can be a bit of scarcity mentality or like kind of the difference between vocation and profession. Like, so much of how people receive my music, it's not really up to me and it's kind of none of my business. And now that I'm in a place in my career where like the cup feels really full, like I feel like I have so much more than enough. So the thing that happens next is just like playing or like having fun or just getting, you know, I thought so much on this record, weirdly, about Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Just cause I'm so obsessed with Linda McCartney, really.
I love that. You mentioned that, the vibe of the photographs, which I presume you mean at that period when they moved up to Scotland or whatever.
Yeah.
To Mull.
But also her, throughout her life.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so obsessed with her art and her sense of self. Her self-portraits are amazing. Mm. Like, there is so much color and presence and authenticity and joy in those photos. And also thinking about just like that Wings era, I feel like there is such a like silliness about Paul.
Yeah.
Within his like deep craft and seriousness, where he's sort of like, you make a record and then you make another one.
Well, his thing was, it was din, wasn't it? His motto was din. And I think it still is, which is do it now. It was just to do it now, when they made Band on the Run. Let's make half of it in New York, or half of it in London, half of it in Lagos in Nigeria.
Yeah, totally.
Why? Oh, just because we met a guy.
So, exactly. Great, right? I'm just like, why wait? And also just like, life is long and also short. And you make a record, you make another one. Like, I think sort of taking the pressure off that like every record has to be this like incredible opus, like, or just letting the process actually become the art. Like, it could just be a really nice way to spend a week. That's what this record was. And like, I can't wait to make another one, and maybe it'll be great and maybe it'll be terrible, and like, whatever, like, it's okay.
I think you can also sort of like, there's this point which you can look in the mirror and go, I'm a songwriter. I'm a good songwriter. Yeah. This is what songwriters do. And this is the album I'm making this year, or this half of this year, or whatever. And be trusting in your instincts, right? Because
totally,
that sounds like what this new record is.
That's about, how I feel. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I get into a studio and I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I really trust that I know what I like, and I trust my taste. And I also deeply trust that there is plenty still to learn, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to make a great record and learning about music and being surprised by music. And I think being able to hold both at the same time, if I can keep that up, then I'm in a good spot.
We can't wait to hear this stuff live. Oh, it sounds like it is on the LP anyway. For the time being, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And it goes on and on and on when you hear this song.
And that was Maggie Rogers. The new record is called Don't Forget Me, and it's out now on Polydor Records. Maggie is touring too, so search all the usual suspects for details of those live shows. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Chungu, who also edits the show. We'll be back with our next episode in a week's time, but for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.